Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something awakens imagination, empowers storytellers, and connects the Missoula community through the transformative power of personal storytelling. It is a celebration of each other, our stories, and how we move through the world together. All of the stories that tell us something are true. Stories last for 10 minutes and are told from memory. Everyone is welcome to tell a story. The Missoula community comes together for a night of true personal stories, shared live, focused on a theme. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This episode of the Tell Us Something podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on December 8th, 2015 at the Wilma in Missoula, Montana. Eight storytellers shared their story based upon the theme, Illumination Revelation. This edition of the Tell Us Something podcast is brought to us by Marlies Borchers and is titled, The Hard Part of Tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
So Mark has said to numerous people that I'm the most nervous and shaky speaker he's ever put on the Tell Us Something stage. I'm kind of a reward-driven person, so I'm here to defend that title. And it is scary, but I don't want you to worry about me because I hydrated today. And so if I start losing a lot of water up here in one way or another, just bear with me. We'll get through it, I promise. So it's the last days of July, and I walk with my husband through the picketed gate of our front yard, and my kids are inside the house, and I know that I can't look at them. And I had bought Bub, that's my husband's name, not even kidding. I had bought Bub a hammock for Father's Day, and I decided that I would climb aboard that unsteady sling, and he pulled up a lawn chair and sat down next to me and held my hand and told me that if I looked up through the canopy of the tree, that where you could see the sky through it, you would also see all kinds of insects and birds and even the stars at night. And I'm looking up through the tree. We had just come from the emergency room, and about 10 hours at the emergency room. And it was really busy that day, so we had a long wait, about 3 hours. And I was in the most immense pain that I ever hoped to fathom. And all I could do at that point really was bury my head in his shoulder and try to detach myself as much as I could from my physical being. And when we finally did get called, we stood up and I realized that the silent tears that had been coming in a steady drip out of my face had soaked about a 12-inch section of his shirt, which now clung to him in such a sweet, sad, pathetic, see-through kind of way. And he had handed me a lot of tissues, and I still had them clutched in my fist, but he had never once asked me to use them. My doctor decided that the first order of business that we would take care of was that pain, and she was the loveliest creature in the world, an angel, seriously. And while we waited for those orders to come through, and we waited for the medicine to actually take effect, he pulled up a chair next to me and held my hand and told me stories of every cold beer and conch fritter we had ever had on faraway beaches. I knew exactly what was wrong with me. I had a hernia, an out-of-control hernia. I knew that was going to be embarrassing to say up here. My doctor was very gracious to me and kindly explained that we would go ahead and do a CAT scan anyway, just to rule out any other possibilities that my art degree may not have helped me to find. And a CAT scan, by the way, guys, if you've never had one, makes you feel 100% like you're peeing your pants right there, right now. And you're not, but you won't believe anybody who tells you that you're not. And I just, in case you wanted that piece of information down the road, felt like you should have it. And so, like I said, this was a really long day, and it was shortly before we were sent home, in like the ninth hour of our visit, when my lovely doctor returned again, and my husband slept in a chair upright next to me with half of a cafeteria sandwich in one hand and an open packet of mayonnaise in the other. And I was drifting in and out, kind of, you know, I had been medicated pretty heavily. And she came in with another man and another doctor. And there were a lot of words being said. And he said to me that, in fact, I did have a small hernia, but that it was in no way the cause of this kind of pain. And he said some other sentence that involved the words large mass. And I'm looking around at everybody, at my husband and at my lady doctor and at this new guy, and I'm like, what? Wait, whoa, wait. I don't even have time for this. I cannot be bothered with words like large mass. And I said, are you trying to tell me that I have a tumor? And he said, we want to be careful with that word, because tumor automatically kind of implies to people that they have cancer. And we don't have that information at this point. So for today's purposes, it's a mass. Okay? So what does mass imply? That it's a jar of marmalade? And what's large mean? I mean, are we talking small rabbit? Are we talking bread box? I was kindly told, in the sincerest way, to please try not to worry until I could see a specialist. And we went home. So in the hammock, I'm looking up into the tree for the points of light. And I'm trying not to worry. But the words cancer in my family has always been followed by get your affairs in order. And that was going to be especially tricky for me at this point because I haven't even had an affair. And when I was younger, would have been a better time to do that. So at this point, my daughter bounds out of the house and brightly says, how's mom? And I'm looking up into the tree and giant tears are rolling out of my eyes into the hollow shells of my ears. And I hate myself in this moment I hate myself for being weak. I hate myself for being scared. And I hate myself for being in pain. I hear my husband answer her, and he tells her that I'm gonna be okay. And I take another second to hate myself for not being able to look at her and tell her that myself. And I don't want this to be the moment that scars her. When I was 23, I burst into the ICU waiting room where my mom lay in a coma in the rooms beyond. And I got there just in time to hear the doctor say that she had less than a 50% chance of living until morning. And my dad hung there, suspended in air, the way a building does just after it's been imploded. And he crumbled to the floor at his feet and begged him for her life, begged him to save her. 4 months after that, I visited him in the hospital. And I had driven from Missoula to Great Falls and spent some time gathering myself outside of his room. And got myself together and walked in and offered a, "Hey, Dad, how are you?" His hair was the color of wolves. And he gave me a quizzical look and gently reached up and pulled a section of it out and tossed it on the bed before me. And I, after what seemed like an unbearably long silence, he looked at me and said, "What are you going to do?" And I wasn't equipped to have that conversation that day, and I never have been, so I simply offered that I was going to be a star. But what I knew in my heart was that I was very soon going to be an orphan. And no matter how many times he had told me that he would always be there to pick me up and dust my butt off, that he no longer could be. And these are my scars. These are the scars that I carry, that I'm desperately afraid on that day in the hammock of my children ever having, that they inevitably will have to have. And these scars are like a large Russian woman that just stands on my throat. What actually did come to pass was a pretty massive surgery. Sorry, guys. I had to do it. And a humbling recovery, but I want you to know that my surgeon is the kindest man and a really good sport. And even though he wouldn't let me keep it to make a lava lamp out of, he did humor me by taking a really great selfie of himself with my tumor in the operating room. He's awesome. And it turns out that it was a little more on the side of bread box than it was rabbit. And thankfully, within a week or so, we got the pathology back that it was also benign. And a tremendous burden and fear of the unknown was mercifully lifted from us all. Thank you.
Thanks, Marlise. Marlise Borchers is a second-generation ceramics artist. She came to Missoula in 1990 and studied fine arts and creative writing at the University of Montana. Frightfully in love with her three children, she hopes only to cause them enough damage to leave them with a good sense of humor. Tell Us Something is proud to be fiscally sponsored by Missoula Community Foundation, a 501c3 organization. Missoula Community Foundation has been providing leadership to Missoula nonprofits and inspiring long-term philanthropy in Missoula since 2007. For the good of Missoula, forever. MissoulaCommunityFoundation.org. Thanks to our title sponsor for 2015, The Bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. And thanks to all of our sponsors, Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years. The Top Hat hosts a variety of Montana-based artists and has become a destination for national touring musicians. In addition to great music, the Top Hat hosts comedy shows, film, performance art, and storytelling. The Top Hat also offers a unique dining experience centered on local, house-made ingredients. Dining made different. TopHatLounge.com. The Wilma, a locally owned and independently operated venue, The Wilma has anchored the Missoula cultural and entertainment scene for almost 100 years. Constructed in 1921 as a vaudeville house, The Wilma was utilized as a movie house for the majority of its history. In the 1980s, The Wilma began to once again host live entertainment. Now, The Wilma is a state-of-the-art live music facility within a spectacular historic building. TheWilma.com. Thanks to Cash for Junkers, who provided the music for the podcast. Find them at CashForJunkersMusic.com. Podcast production by Ashley Nielsen. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and most especially to the storytellers, Mark Moss, Becky Spica, Andy Helzel, Carla Thailand, Ben Brewer, Joyce Gibbs, Marley Sporchers, and Bill McDavid. Remember, your story matters. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Check the website to find out how you can tell your own story and learn about the themes for the 2016 season. Tell us something.org.